many of these crimes perhaps could have been solved sooner, perhaps saved other lives. But if it were not for the prejudice of the Native Americans, the Osage, plus they didn't have the forensic tools available to us today.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I mean, I think obviously there was some lack of training in law enforcement back at that time. But I think the bigger issue was everybody in the community knew who some of the killers were, at least some of the whites. And they were allowed to go free because the system was deeply corrupt at the time. It was very easy to pay off somebody in power to look the other way. But also there was this deep prejudice. I mean, people like Molly Burkhart and many of the Osage, they really campaigned and crusaded for justice. You know, they weren't these passive victims, as, you know, sometimes they get depicted at in stories. They were at great risk to their own lives, trying to get the authorities to do something about these crimes, and they're being targeted. And, you know, these crimes will look the other way often because, you know, the authorities didn't do anything because the victims were Native Americans.
Yes, and the community was overall frightened. Didn't they leave their porch lights on, as much lights on around their home to avoid some intruder?
They did. They did. They would hang these lights. It looked almost like Christmas lights. But and actually one, I know one descendant of an Osage told me that they had always heard that, you know, because the elders often tried to protect their children or the next generation from the horrors that took place. And so told them these lights were kind of hung as kind of celebratory or Christmas lights. But, you know, they were hung to illuminate the area because of the terror of the Osage Reign of Terror, and to they'd be able to see an intruder coming in.
Have any of the relatives of all these people in your book that you've written about reached out to you in any form or fashion?
Well, many of the descendants, Osage descendants, you know, for example, descendants of Molly Burkhart and other descendants of members of the Osage Nation who were murdered, I interviewed for the book. Margie Burkhart, for example, was instrumental in my research. She shared with me oral histories and photographs, and so many other members of the Osage Nation. Mary Jo Webb, who sadly passed away recently, was somebody who had investigated one of the suspicious deaths in her own family, and she had been collecting documents and doing her own research, which she shared with me. And I also interviewed some of the descendants of the murderer's family, of the Burkhart clan, connected to the Hale clan, to get their stories. And that was always an awkward, uncomfortable process. I did find that in most cases, the younger generation were open with me and knew about what had happened and were, at least generally speaking, expressed remorse. But it would depend on the case-by-case level about what you would hear and the loyalties that might still exist. I also tried to interview descendants of the Guardians. They, in particular, were often resistant to giving interviews and wanting to kind of reckon with the past.
Did you get any Guardian?
I got some descendants of Guardians, yes. Okay. I did. But there were some who I think I was very suspicious of, you know, the Guardians themselves, not the descendants, whose, you know, ancestors are popping up in, you know, identified previously in history books or in accounts publicly about the roles they have played. And some of those people seem to want to dodge me. Mm-hmm. and Mary Jo Webb told me a very interesting story. Mary Jo Webb, an Osage elder, she had been a school teacher and she had done some of her own research. At one point, she had written up some of the history she had learned from her own investigations, and she had put them in the little town library. And not long after they disappeared, and she was sure that it was taken by it. She thought she knew who had taken it. It was a descendant of one of the Guardians who had been implicated in some of the research. And so you still saw this attempt to kind of rub out or whitewash some of the history. And one of the great tragedies of these crimes was that, you know, not only did the murderers often eliminate the victims and take their lives, but they also erased their history in many cases because the crimes were not properly investigated and they were covered up.
Marjorie Burkhart, she's a descendant of whom?
She is the descendant of Molly Burkhart and Ernest Burkhart. She's the granddaughter. And so, you know, one of the things that also about these crimes, you asked me if I had any of the descendants, you know, sometimes because these were inheritance schemes, you have people marrying in, you know, the murderers and the victims were often in the same household, the targets. And so she showed me a photograph of her father, who was a son of Molly and Ernest. And the photograph showed her father as just a little boy at the time. And it showed his sister as well, who was also very young at the time, standing next to a man, holding hands. But the photograph of the man, the kids, you can see their bodies and you see their, you know, full profiles. But the man, it only rises, the photograph rises to his chest, and then the head was ripped off. And it was ripped off because it had had their father. And Margie told me that her grandfather had, you know, the photograph of Ernest, and Margie's father ripped it out because, you know, it's just the insidiousness of learning that your own father had plotted to kill you.
I thought the treatment you gave of Marjorie at the end of the book was beautifully written, the way you treated her. Have you visited with her after the book and after she was able to read it?
Yes, I did. I've tried to keep in touch, and I still go back to Osage County, and it's been a little while. I was actually just thinking of getting in touch with Marjorie. It's been a little while, but yes, I've seen her a few times since the book has come out and communicated with her. And, you know, for me, one of the great honors and privileges in telling this story were the opportunities to be able to interview these people and meet them, and interestingly enough, over time, you know, develop friendships with so many of these people. Margie Reghorn, the museum director who first told me that story about the devil standing right there, has become a good friend. And so those are some of the rewards. And I do think, as we've talked about the crimes, I do just want to make one very important point, because it also gets to these relationships today and the people I know today, which is that an Osage lawyer has told me that one day out at the dances, actually, when I was meeting with Margie, and we were out in Gray Horse, and we were out at the camp, and there were lots of people, and I was interviewing lots of people, and I interviewed an Osage lawyer, and, you know, she had told me, you know, she said, we were victims of these crimes, but we don't live as victims. And I think it's always important in these histories that we underscore that the Osage Nation remains vibrant as its own political system to this day, and remains a very strong nation. I always try to make that point as well, that history just doesn't stop in place.